The piping hot takes of Ryan Hot Take Hickey do not, I repeat, do not reflect the views of the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network.
It's Hickey at Night Sunday. I'm combing our hair with moose gel spray. The takes are so hot, hot, hot. Sometimes it's right, usually not. His best segment is coming up next, but you better watch out for the Hickey.
Everybody!
Hot takes and hair gel on a Sunday night. Hickey's got the taste that probably ought to cry. Dropping a teaser for what's coming up next, but you better watch out for the Hickey Hicks. Talking Penn State while Stu smoking Kush, but Hickey is always the number one mush. You will nicer and more smug and more sober than Stu. We only joke of us, we like you, but I have to ask, is it true? Is your hair held together by Pace and Luke? Oh, Hickey's takes are coming up next, but you better watch out for the Hickey Hicks.
All right, it is a Wednesday, so it's a Hot Take Hickey Wednesday on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Dante Thornton will join us coming up at 4:20 p.m. Eastern time. Leroy Butler, the Hall of Famer, in studio today at 5 p.m. Eastern time. Any hot takes about Dante Thornton that we could just basically guarantee that he'll have a Hall of Fame career if you crap on him here in this segment before he joins us next?
You know what? I'll do it for Stu. He's going to suck.
Oh, my God.
Bust. He is going to. Stu, who's the speedster that you got drafted?
Darius Hayward Bay.
He's going to be Darius Hayward Bay 2.0. Raider Nation, you're welcome.
You know what? You could be the next Mel Kiper. You could be.
In what sense? Just yelling about how I'm right and everyone else is wrong and ignoring every single wrong pick that or prediction that I make.
You have
the
hair.
Course of my history.
You have the hair. You have the hot takes. And you have the good, opinionated...
My heels dug
presence,
in.
...presence is what I would say. It's like an opinionated presence to you.
You can't see Mel or I's feet because they are so dug into the ground of what stance we stand on that I think we also mirror each other there.
Well, there's one big difference between you and Mel Kiper.
What is that?
You hate Shador Sanders. He loves Shador Sanders.
I don't hate Shador Sanders.
Yes,
I mean, just a realist. That's all.
What are you a realist about?
About him. About his bravado, quote unquote bravado. About his personality. About his outlook on the game. About his outlook on himself. About his skill set. About how the NFL views him. I'm not a hater on him, Colorado. I don't drink the Kool-Aid like all national media want to do about how great Dion in Colorado is. I'm just a realist. That's all. That's all I am.
The only thing that I have a problem with you is that, like, you look at Colorado and what they've done the last 2 years, from one win to one of the most relevant programs in the country to a team that won, what, 9 games last year? Very impressive what they've done the last 2 years. And you've basically just knocked it the entire way. But Penn State blows every big game they play in, and you keep on being an excuse maker for James Franklin and company.
Well, I don't make excuses for them.
Oh, yeah, you do.
When do I make excuses? When they lose, I rightfully say they should have been, like, they lost a game.
You literally texted me the other day, and you said Penn State Notre Dame didn't win the semifinal game. Penn State lost it.
Yeah, I said by that.
I'm just saying.
That's a knock to Penn State.
You never give the other team credit, always just suck up to Penn State. I'm not even disagreeing with your take, but it's just...
No, I think I'm being fair. Penn State, going back to that game, Drew Eller threw a pick in his own end zone. Their offense stunk, but
they
gave away the game.
I haven't talked about this. You see this James Franklin video?
I did.
So that was at the spring game?
That was at the spring game on Saturday.
And a fan just called him a fraud and he lost his mind?
Yes, that's by all accounts, that's what happened.
What do you make of that?
I think it's weak, honestly.
Good.
I don't like it.
Okay.
I think James Franklin
accountable.
I think James Franklin is too good for that. And I think it's a bad look.
Dude, you're right. He's just good.
No, but like any coach in that situation, like, you don't win. And that's my biggest frustration. He did it after the Ohio State game. I get there's emotions that are higher.
Where he rung the victory bell when they lost.
You don't,
Stu Nod.
Unless it's like a Jaren Duran situation where a fan truly crosses the line, which happens, but not as much as you think. There's no winning.
Be the bigger man.
Right, there's no winning that situation. It's like us on Twitter. When people tweet us about whatever that we say that they disagree with,
ignore
and they
it,
go
have
name
fun.
Calling, you fighting that person about why you're right and they're wrong, you don't win. There's no end game that's a positive. And that's what bothers me the most is he takes on these battles that are impossible for him to win.
What did you make last night of John Halliburton going in antagonizing Giannis Antetokounmpo? I was hoping the Greek Freak was about to punch him.
He's lucky. Number one, he's walking on his own.
I would have applauded it.
I agree. I think if something did go down, I don't think Giannis should be in the wrong. I think he had the green light to swing on him in that situation, especially when he first thought it was a fan before realizing who it actually was. That's embarrassing. Like, honestly, I hope I'm never like that as a dad. I don't have kids, so I don't know, but I think that's just embarrassing as a father.
Oh, I think you're going to be bad at Little League games.
No, no.
You're going to be standing there, this kid sucks. You know, my son's going to hit a home run, and then he's going to strike out.
I could never, no. That I guarantee I will not be, because you see it growing up and it's so embarrassing.
I don't know, Hickey. A few drinks and you have a mouth.
I'm not, but the benefit for me is I'm not confrontational. So I will not go to the coach and be like, Coach, why not play my kid? Well, what are we doing here? This guy sucks. Put my guy in. I'm too scared to do that.
Okay.
So I will never be like John Halliburton last night going up to a 7-foot insane freak of a man and taunting him because my son has hit a game-winning shot over him because I'd be too afraid he'd swing at me.
Now, you know how much respect I have for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know I have been one of the biggest advocates for keeping Giannis in Milwaukee.
What was it? Do you remember the slogan from a few years ago? Was it just sign
it? It was keep the Greek freak. That was one hashtag. Sign that Supermax.
Okay.
Those were the hashtags that were trending in Milwaukee. And I was very popular in the NBA Bucks world with Reddit. You know, usually bad things are said about me on Reddit. That was the one time something positive was said about me on Reddit. I don't feel good about Giannis staying. I don't see why you would stay at this point.
And I think I could also make you the argument from the Bucks perspective, why would you keep him? Like, if you truly are about winning.
See, you tend to do this with star players. You do.
Me.
Yeah, like Josh Allen, the Bills should trade him. Giannis, the Bucks should trade him. And you, I'm not criticizing you, even though the Josh Allen opinion was stupid. But you tend to look at it why the team should move on, and I tend to look at it through the lens of why the player should move on.
Well, I feel like from the player perspective, from Giannis' perspective, it's obvious, right? He said he wants to be in Milwaukee as long as they're winning. Well, Dame's out next year. That salary's not going anywhere. You're capped, or you're strapped with your cap. You have no coach that's good. You have no depth whatsoever. Any guy you want to bring back is old.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you look at the roster. It's like that team is nowhere close to competing against the Celtics, the Cavs. So that's why I look at it.
And anytime they're backed into a corner, they have been able to swing and deliver someone to make him want to stay. I don't think there's, to your point, a way to deliver someone wanting him to stay, but still. I would never sit there when I have a player who's still this young and still in his prime and has accomplished so much and be, as an organization, I want to get rid of that player.
I'm not saying you want to get rid of him, but I think when you are realistic, if your number one goal, and this is not true for every organization, but if your number one goal is we want to win as often as we can and compete for a title as many years as possible, I think it's worth taking a step back.
Oh, they have no chance of winning a championship if they get rid of Giannis. For a long time.
Well, you could be like the Thunder. Like, you got to get it right, but there's I think your path to winning is easier. What's the right word? I'm trying to look. I think you have a better path to win quicker by trading Giannis and keeping Giannis.
I also have to ask you this. The Knicks, that was bad last night.
Whole series has been bad. They've been outplayed for most of it.
Just yes or no, do they still win this series?
I think they do.
How much percentage of chance would you have them to beat the Celtics 4 times in a 7-game
series?
Zero.
But that was the case even before the series. But now, maybe I could have put it at
and
1 or 5.
And you're usually optimistic.
Yeah, this is actually, this
the
is
most
a
critical
weird
I've ever heard
emotion.
You be about one of your own teams.
I actually did not, that's a lot. Like, I was excited for the playoffs, for the Knicks. But like, in the back of my mind the entire time, ever since the postseason started, really even since like March started, this team has no chance to beat the Celtics. So it's like, sure, they can, whoever they play in round one, in this case the Pistons, like it'd be great to win, they should win. But like, their season's already like fait accompli. Like we know how it's ending. The only question is how many games? And right now, if they win one game against the Celtics out of 5, it's going to be a miracle.
Ryan Hot Take Hickey in the studio with us. 100 people or 1 gorilla? Who wins?
100 people.
Oh, you're crazy.
I don't understand. This is.
Do you know how big a gorilla is?
I totally, totally understand the size and the strength of a gorilla. But we're talking about 100 men here. Yeah. Even 100 average-sized men. At some point, quantity is greater than quality.
Hickey,
it's
sorry.
A numbers game. If you have 10 guys on the right arm of the gorilla, 10 guys pinning the left arm of the gorilla, 10 guys holding his left leg down, 10 guys holding his right leg down, that is 40 people right there pinning the gorilla to the ground.
You're
going to put another 5 people on his neck, and then you have another 50 people free to start punching the gorilla, choke him out. Now, are we going to till death? Are we just, is this like a tap out situation? I don't know.
You got
to
kill the gorilla.
But like, Yeah, I mean, how could someone not put him in a chokehold and make him tap out? Like, this to me is so obvious.
So when gorillas start popping up everywhere and start dominating the world, we now can blame you because you're going to put the hex on us regular people. But think
goodness.
About it. 100 people. So let's just say Stu, Samter, Gallo, and you are for the 100 people. What the heck good is that up against a gorilla? None.
Individually,
that gorilla will maul you in a second, Stu in a second, Samter in a second, me in a second, Ack in a second, a Gallo in a second.
How many people at one time can a gorilla maul? Like, probably one at a time, maybe two. It's an you come
Hickey.
In at with waves.
Hickey.
You overwhelm the gorilla in numbers.
Stop. You just said you're not a confrontational person.
Yes.
You're running at that gorilla?
I'm
you're
not.
Sitting there with the urine going right down your leg.
I think fair or
you're like Samter in the first segment. You're crapping your pants.
A fair assumption is these 100 people are willing to risk their lives to die for the greater good. Because
prepare for glory.
I think that has to be part of it. Because, I mean, in general, if you have 100 people that are scared, then fine, the gorilla wins. But if you have 100 people that are fearless of the gorilla, said, I'm going to war and I'm willing to risk my life to win this battle, I think it's pretty easy the 100 men beat the gorilla. Even if it's 100 Stews, there's no doubt in my mind.
Whoa, why does Stu have to catch a stray here?
Well, sorry, Stu. You're the first. Even 100 Samters.
Stu, can you...
Even 100 Samters.
Can you stand up for yourself here? Everyone keeps on taking shots at Stu. I don't like it. I think you guys are mean to Stu.
Sorry, Stu.
That's fine. I don't care. I don't care enough.
Stu's like, who gives a crap what Hickey has to say? He's wrong about anything anyway. Who gets the NBA Finals?
I'm saying the Thunder and the Celtics. Chalk,
okay.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And if the Cavs
are one of the, if the Celtics and the Thunder can't get to the Finals, then who gets there?
So my initial, before the playoffs, I would have said the Clippers. They've not played as well as I thought.
Oh, yeah. Weren't they the team that was like the biggest dark horse to get to the Finals?
That's right.
How are they doing now? They're down 3-2?
They're down 3-2. The defense that was number one for a long stretch is now starting to crumble.
The Hex!
I would say if it's not Oklahoma City, if it's not Boston, I will go with the Cavaliers.
Okay. So, and then how about in the Western Conference? Timberwolves or Nuggets?
I would go the Nuggets.
Warriors?
I don't blame the Warriors. I think their ceiling is one series win. I think their ceiling is like the Knicks. Win a first round series and done.
Terry Wilson with an elite comment in the YouTube chat. Uh-oh. 100 gorillas versus one Shep. I got Shep. But Shep can't beat Mike Tyson. Or Shep can beat Mike Tyson. That'd be good.
Shep would be a psycho that would say, I'll fight the gorilla one-on-one.
I think Shep believes he can beat the gorilla.
I mean, if you believe you can beat Mike Tyson,
I think Shep would say, forget about the other 99 men. I will go mano a mano up against the gorilla.
I'm just
all
curious
I need
what
is a can of tuna.
What do you think his strategy would be? Because for Mike Tyson, it was I'm going to run around the ring because he's so old, I'm going to tire him out because he thought that Mike Tyson was just going to chase him the whole time. Then he's going to get a 1-2 knockout in there because Mike Tyson's out of breath. I'd love to know what his strategy would be for the gorilla.
And by the way that J.J. Redick is coaching the Lakers right now, I would say that Shep could also coach the Lakers too. I think he picked the wrong coach. He went after Darvin Ham.
Pick five guys, have him run out there for the entire half and say, fellas, let's see what we can do. Shep could do that.
What's your biggest reaction from the NFL draft, by the way?
Ooh. Biggest overall reaction. I mean, Stop outside Jeff. Of Shador, obviously. You know what? I don't think this is talked about enough. I don't know what the Falcons are doing. Trading a first-round pick.
They're going for it.
For what, though? You're going for... You pick a guy in James Pierce. Say what you want about his off-the-field character. Put that aside for a second. You have essentially a rookie quarterback in Michael Penix Jr. He could get hurt. He could struggle. You're, quote-unquote, going for it. And if things go to hell next year, you're out of a first-round pick. You're hurting yourself. I don't think the reward of getting maybe two bookend edge rushers is worth the risk of this season going poorly, a rookie quarterback not playing well, and you now losing a top possibly 10 pick.
I'd still be surprised if that's top 10, but it's not a
They should be good. I'm a Michael Penix. I think he'll be fine. But that's to bet a first-round pick that he'll be fine, I was mind-blown.
Your spiciest take of the NFL draft was that Will Howard, this is Hickey's take, not mine, was the second best. Is going to be the second-best quarterback of this draft class. Landed in a good situation.
That's right.
But your take's still going to be wrong.
Who's number two?
It's going to be Shador.
If he makes the roster.
Shador will make the roster. Shador and Dylan Gabriel locked to make the roster. It's coming down to Kenny Pickett or Joe Flacco. I think Joe Flacco's the odd guy out there.
I think Shador's career is actually going to follow Geno Smith where he has to go to a different team to have, like, do you when you believe in Shador, do you think he's going to be a Cleveland Brown like 5 years down the road?
Well, the odds would be against Shador because Cleveland rotates in quarterbacks like Stu rotates in and out maybe a smoking Blunts? Device on a Friday night. Can you clean it up?
Sorry.
This is after. This is afternoon drive.
I did not know that the B word was off on it. I apologize.
Come on.
I'm used to nighttime when more things can fly.
Oh my God.
Including curse words.
Yeah, this is not Hick at Night. All right. This is not 11 p.m. on a Sunday. All right. Jeez. We have a standard to uphold here. All righty. I've had enough of you today. You're out of here.
This is 15 minutes longer than most people give me, so thank you.
Enough. How does your girlfriend live with you? That's my question.
It's a great question. I don't know. Ask myself every day.
How has she not kicked you out yet?
It's a great question. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Are you a good, house guest? You live there.
Of course.
Yeah?
I do a lot of the cleaning. Of course.
Okay.
I'm very respectful. I do a lot of the dishes. I clean up. I leave no mess.
All the punishments that Jax Ulbrich is going to have to do to earn back the $100,000, that's like you on a daily basis.
Minus the yellow or the orange jumpsuit on the side of the road, pick up the trash. That's basically, yeah, him and I are one and the same.
He's not a criminal.
Well, if I'm Jeff Ulbrich and I lost $100K, you might as well be a criminal. You're getting out there and you are not stop working until I say stop.
Yeah. What about the Eagles say in the Super Bowl? Like, belt to ass, right? Jeff Ulbrich.
21-year-old kid, you're probably above physical punishment, but not in this case.
It's like Mr. Deeds when the quarterback of the Jets was disrespectful, and then Adam Sandler tells the dad of the quarterback of the Jets, and he's like, no, daddy, no, and they have the belt just standing over him. That's what it's kind of like. All right, we got to get ready. Dante Thornton is going to be a star in the NFL because Hickey, I guess, is out on him. He's going to join us next on the other side. Imagine if Dante sitting there just listening to this. That's Ryan Hot Take Hickey, Dante. You could thank him at your Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Coming on back. All righty, welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's talk a little bit about the Raiders. I'm actually going out to Las Vegas tomorrow morning for a little vacation. And Dante Thornton Jr. is going to get to know Las Vegas very well as he was a fourth-round pick at 108 overall in this past NFL draft. He played his college ball. It started off at Oregon, and he wrapped up his career in college at Tennessee. And he's kind enough to join us right now. Dante, first and foremost, congratulations. Appreciate the time. And how you been?
I mean, I've been good, man. Just enjoying it, man. Definitely been good.
So take me back, right? It's Saturday. You get into the fourth round. You get that phone call from the Raiders. Relive that moment for me.
Man, it's so crazy to me. Like, so originally I thought like the Titans were going to get me like that first pick of the fourth. But as the time went on, I was just sitting there and I seen my phone ring and I seen a number and then it was like a Las Vegas area code. I looked to my left. My dad was sitting next to me. I looked at him. I looked back at my phone and then I answered it. And then I heard Coach, and it was like I had went into like a moment of shock. It was like I really couldn't say too much. And I just kept saying, yes, sir. It was crazy. I swear it was crazy.
And that's pretty neat, right? Like, it's always cool to get drafted, obviously. Like, I can't speak from experience. But on the other line is Pete Carroll, who we know what he did at USC, and we know what he's done in the NFL with the Seahawks, now with the Raiders. That's got to be pretty neat to have a coach like Pete Carroll want you on his football team, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely, for sure. It was crazy to me. Definitely was crazy.
I'll tell you, though, I don't know if you've seen this, and I'm sure that you watch back, right, your name getting called, like, numerous times, but the commentary on ESPN, Lewis Riddick said you remind him of Randy Moss a little bit. When you hear that, what comes to mind?
Man.
Yeah, you didn't hear that?
That's so good. That's a great comparison. Randy Moss is not the best, one of the best receivers to ever play football, so having that comparison is definitely – like, that's some big shoes to fill, but, yeah, I definitely love that comparison.
Yeah, he said the way that you accelerate and the long legs and the speed that you have, you know, running the 4.33, that's the similarities that he saw to Randy Moss, which is pretty cool. What can you bring, though, to the Raiders? If people haven't seen you at Oregon or Tennessee, Dante Thornton Jr., when they watch you on Sundays now, what are you going to do at the next level?
Oh, yeah, I feel sure you're going to definitely see a receiver that's a big and fast guy that can stretch the field and play inside or outside receiver. But the biggest thing you won't see on the field is the fact that I'm a great person. Like, with me joining the team will be adding a great person on and off the field. So I say that's something that people will get to notice after some time.
Yeah, I was talking to Lindsay, who works with Max. I'm a Max Talent person as well. And she was telling me you already do a lot of work already in the Baltimore community because you're from Baltimore. Tell me a little bit about the charity work that you've already started to do.
Oh yeah, so I have a foundation back home. It's called Driven Throughout the Journey, and like that's my initials, DTTJR. So they are my initials. But basically what I do is I have two scholarships that I do for kids in the city that are like going to private school, and I pay for their tuition for the semester.
That's awesome.
I want to build on that. I want to build on that in the years to come and do like a bunch of like back to school drives. I want to start my own football program where I'm doing 707 for boys and girls. So I just want to do a lot just to get back to the neighborhood and just the city that I'm from.
Obviously, you have so much going on, right? Transitioning from college to the NFL. And clearly, this is something that has been near and dear to your heart the last few years. Why was it so important to want to give back right away and do this so early on?
I say I just knew how hard it was for me growing up and not having that type of access to like those people that were successful and made it out of my city. So like with me being one of the first, well, not the first, but one of those guys who actually was able to make it out, just being able to use my story to show other children that are growing up there that like it's very much possible to happen. And I'm a living example from that.
What type of football fan were you growing up as a kid? Just wondering.
Oh, as in like a team?
Yeah, team, players, you could answer both ways, yeah.
I say team, like, for college, Oregon was my dream school, so I grew up, like, in Oregon. That's when they have the best uniforms, but that's when they had Marcus Mariota, De'Anthony Thomas. My favorite players, Calvin Johnson and Julio Jones. So I say, like, those are definitely two of my, like, favorite players in football, or receivers, if anything.
What do you take from the Oregon experience? Because I know, right, you hit the transfer portal, eventually you did finish your career at Tennessee, but you look back at your time from Oregon, how'd that kind of shape you?
I just say it helped me check the box of being able to go to a school, like the school that was my dream school. I felt like if I didn't go to Oregon, I would have regretted not being able to say that I went to my dream school. So knowing that I did that, that's something I'd be able to look back at. Say, yeah, a lot of people won't be able to want that, got to live all that.
Dante Thornton Jr. here with us on the Zach Gelb Show, the Affinity Sports Network, a fourth-round pick. With the Las Vegas Raiders. When you look back at Tennessee and your time there, after transfer, maybe not knowing what you were going to get into at Tennessee, how do you look back at the experience with the Volunteers?
I definitely say it was a tricky but great experience. Like I learned a lot throughout that time about myself on and off the field. But I say like being at Tennessee for those 2 years, it helped me develop into like the player that I am now, with being able to deal with a lot of adversity and knowing that things don't always go my way, but as long as I take advantage of the opportunity that I'm given, things will work out for me. And I lived that out throughout my career, especially my 2 years at Tennessee.
Yeah, what was exactly tricky there? Just wondering. Like, what was the adversity that you had to fight through at Tennessee?
I just say just like with me being very competitive, I always wanted to start and stuff like that. With not having the opportunity to start in very many games there, I say that was a big part of the adversity. But just like it was a learning curve when I first got there because Tennessee has a very different offense than most schools. So they brought me in as a slot, so I was trying to learn the offense in that position. It was a little bit more difficult for me, but once I got it, it was good for me.
And last year, obviously, Nico Iamaleava was on Tennessee. What do you think Nico could be? I know that's a big news item with him leaving Tennessee and going to UCLA, but what do you think he could ultimately develop into as a quarterback?
Oh, Nico already is a good quarterback, but he's going to finish as a great quarterback. He's definitely going to be one of those guys that get drafted very high at the quarterback position and have a long career in the NFL, and he's going to do great in these next 2 years in college football for sure.
Did you understand that whole situation, or were you like questioning it like a lot of us were when you look at his departure at Tennessee?
Nah, I understood it. Nico, my guy. That's my dog. I understood it for sure.
Gotcha.
And I'm a guy that
I think we lost him there. Dante Thornton Jr. We got you back. What were you saying? Sorry.
Oh, yeah, I said it's a lot of stuff that was involved with the Nico situation that I can't speak on because I don't know much about. But in terms of just the transfer portal alone, I support guys entering the transfer portal because I was the guy that entered the portal and got somewhere else.
Fair enough. Hey, getting back to the Raiders, Dante Thornton Jr. here with us. Ashton Jeanty was my favorite player in college football this past season. Now he's on the Raiders.
Oh, my goodness.
Man, there's so much about him. I hear the smile. I see the smile. I hear the excitement in your voice. You got to be pretty pumped up to play with Ashton Jeanty, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely pumped up. In my head, is like, we have Ashton Jeanty, we got Brock Bowers. I play receiver, but both of those guys are going to have a lot of attention from the defense, which only make it easier for me because you have to decide, like, you can play man coverage, and then there's a bunch of one-on-ones, but then if you try to play zone, we're going to run the ball. So it's like, we got a lot of weapons, and I feel like we're going to have a great offense for sure.
Yeah, you got Geno Smith.
It's exciting. It's exciting for sure. It's definitely exciting.
Yeah, you got Geno Smith at quarterback, Ashton Jeanty at running back, Brock Bowers at tight end, Jacoby Myers in that receiver room too. Now you. Like, if a Raider fan is asked, okay, year one, what can they expect out of you just to transitioning into the NFL? What could be the immediate impact that you could bring to a team?
I just say just playing my role. Like, I feel like I have the ability to make a lot of plays in the NFL. So I just say just once I learn the whole offense and the system and things like that, being able to just go out there and make the plays that I'm given with every opportunity there is. Like, I'm not going to put no number on anything or something like that, but I just know, like, when I get an opportunity, I'm going to make a lot of plays. And that's something that the fans should be excited for and ready for.
Has it sunk in yet, just wondering, that now you're in the NFL and you're a member of the Raiders?
Yeah, because I had, like, my first meeting. And it's like, when I seen everything, I'm like, yeah, it's real now. Like, it's not college football anymore. But it definitely – it took a few days for it to really set in with me, but it definitely is starting to hit me now.
You know, just out of curiosity, because you were waiting and waiting and waiting to hear your name call, what was your view on the whole Shedeur Sanders situation with him falling all the way to the fifth round?
Oh, that was crazy to me. Like, it threw me off. I don't really know what went into it, but everybody going to have, like, their opportunity. And when that happens, I feel like he's going to take advantage of the opportunity. But it definitely was crazy. I definitely thought he should have been a first-round guy for sure.
Hey, by the way, a 4-3-3, you always knew
4-3,
that.
4-3 flat. 4-3 flat.
Sorry, 4-3 flat. let me get it correct there. When you ran that, obviously you know you're capable of it, but when you put that performance out there, knowing that you could potentially do something and then doing it, you must have been on cloud nine, right?
It was crazy. Like, when I ran, I didn't think I ran good.
Really?
So at the combine, when you're actually there, they don't show what you ran until your second rep. So I didn't really, in my mind, I wasn't really worried about what I ran. I was just hoping, like, I ran something faster than 4.4. So, like, when I got down and ran, I was relaxed when I ran. And then I heard, like, I got a friend, he's a Tennessee, he was a Tennessee fan, younger kid, and he came to the combine. So after I ran, I only could hear him. He was like, "Hey, Dante, 4.3 flat." I was like, "Oh, snap." So I was walking back to, like, the line where everybody was at. Everybody just started running up to me, and they all was saying, like, I ran 4.3 flat. It was crazy to me.
That's wild. And you didn't even think you ran it that fast?
No, I didn't think I did.
That's scary.
Man, it was crazy.
That's absolutely scary. What do you want to improve on the most? Instead of just saying everything, like, real talk, receiver, what do you want to improve on the most, Dante?
I want to improve on my route running ability.
Gotcha. All right, well, Dante, hey, good luck. Congratulations. We appreciate you jumping on board with us today.
Oh, yeah, I definitely appreciate you.
You got it. There he is, Dante Thornton Jr., fourth-round pick of the Las Vegas Raiders, joining us in studio, joining us on the phone on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Lori Butler will join us in studio coming up in about a half hour from now at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific time. We'll come on back with a little Take 5 Wednesday, the five most shocking draft slides. Guys that just fell in the NFL draft, and this is obviously off of Shedeur Sanders and that incredible fall that we saw. I still can't believe that he was a fifth-round pick for someone that we thought was going to go in the first round. All right, then maybe second round. Definitely won't fall out of the third round. Oh, yeah, he fell out of the third round, fell out of the fourth round, and then eventually did go in the fifth round. Let's get the latest update in, though, first. Here's Zach. Let me tell you, Twitter could be a hell of a place. So this is just wild. These are the last three tweets I've seen. So here's the latest on Belichick and Jordan Hudson. Let me tell you, there is a story that this should no longer be in the news cycle. Like, everyone reacts to it. Everyone sees it. All right, she interrupted the interview. Who cares at this point? And this is coming from someone. I went off yesterday on this. But the fact that this is now, what, a 3 or 4 day story? Stu, does this still need to be a story?
I think we've passed that point. I think yesterday was the last day. I think we've gone to a point where it's enough.
Samter, let me ask you this, because you're pretty good at identifying stories, and you know how to just drag out stories. We're doing now 4 days of Belichick and Jordan Hudson. Isn't that day number 4? 3 or 4? Like, isn't it at this point, do I need to have CBS issuing a statement? There are no parameters to the interview. And then the Belichick camp is claiming that, oh, there were parameters around this. At this rate, who cares? The fact that this is still a fight is dumb.
I mean, listen, I think that we're past the point of her chiming in during the interview, but they put out a statement. Mm-hmm. You know, Belichick put out a statement.
Yeah, they shouldn't.
Calling out CBS.
Stupid.
CBS has to put out a statement to defend themselves and explain what's going on.
Yeah.
And then the story advances. So, yeah, I think the story, as long as the story advances, if there was nothing new that happened since the interview aired, then we can move on. But every day that we've talked about this, something new has come up. First, it was the interview. Then it was the TMZ report about her storming out and throwing a tantrum. Then it was this new thing where they put out a statement and CBS having to defend it. At the end of the day, when you're doing a book tour, like, we have a million people coming on shows to do book tours. And what happens? We talk to them about whatever their sport is for 10 minutes, and then we ask them two questions about the book at the end.
Or if the book is so thought-provoking and so good, then you ask them a lot of questions about the book.
Sure, but you're not, like if we've had these situations before where guys are coming on the show and they'll say, well, we're not going to talk about XYZ.
People try to set parameters with me?
That's what I'm saying, and we'll say, no, we're not doing that.
Of course.
Right,
and we tell them go kick rocks.
Right,
and they're like, "But you're going to reject someone of this caliber?" I go, "Great." If there's something really sensitive, for example, a death in the family, and like something with the child, I have a heart.
A legal situation.
I get like, hey, they're not going to say anything. I understand that, but if you tell me, there's sometimes we do these interviews, and they go, "He won't talk about this," and I go, I didn't even know this person had this thing involved with them.
But now I want to know about it.
So if you're going to try to do parameters around interviews and set guidelines and put up bumpers on what we could ask, 99.9% of the time I will say thanks, but no thanks. Because it's no good to us. Because we have a responsibility to the listening audience to ask questions that people are going to want to hear the answers to. And there's a lot of people that do this job that kiss up and suck up to the person that they're interviewing. I'm not saying I have tons of relationships with people that we interview. But if you're just having a guest to have a guest, don't waste our time. All right? It's a waste. And it's a disservice to the listening audience. And sometimes we put a guest on that's good. Sometimes we put a guest on that's bad. But there's always a reason why we put a guest on this show. I'm not bringing on some slap you know what writer for 25 minutes to just kill 25 minutes of airtime because there's nothing to talk about on April 30th. There's hosts that do that, trust me.
Now, you said writer. Is that W-R-I-T-E-R?
No, it's not
or is
a
that
shot
R-E-I-T-E-R.
At Bill Reiter. Like a boring journalist that doesn't give any opinions. Phew. And will be like, oh, well, it's not my responsibility to give an opinion on this. Okay, then why am I talking to you? Shut up. All right? But anyway, why I brought this up. Nikki Glaser, you know her, right? The comedian. She commented, and this is via Savage Sports, which is like a Boston Twitter account. I follow them. Very interesting. The Twitter account says, well, this is interesting and explains a lot about how the Belichick family feels towards Jordan Hudson. On the comments of Julian Edelman's Instagram video, Nikki Glaser defends Jordan Hudson. She writes, 100% this. She's acting as his publicist. Publicists do this during interviews. People are out for blood. Steve Belichick's wife, Jen, chimes in. Publicists act in a professional manner and don't storm off set, delaying interviews. Now, if that's actually Belichick's son's wife, that's juicy. That's worthy of talking about. Because we haven't got into this dynamic yet. There is no way Belichick's children, like how old is Steve Belichick? Early 40s? Let's see, Steve Belichick's age, maybe late 30s? Well, it comes up as Bill Belichick's father, you know, who was 86 and is no longer living. I think he passed away in 2004, 2005, something like that. Let's see, Brian Belichick. Let's just see the age of Brian Belichick. Come on. It doesn't even give his age. Can you guys just look up and see how old the Belichick's kids are? I would imagine they're like late 30s,
early 40s. It looks like Brian is 37.
He's 37?
Yes.
Okay. Can you imagine how they feel that their father, who's 73, is dating someone that's younger, significantly younger than them? That's got to be awkward. Very awkward. It's not like she's 55. Not like she's 60. She's I wouldn't even call her an adult. She's a young adult. Right? Isn't that what you refer as a 23-year-old, like a young adult? Like, right? Like, maybe you're an adult. But the Patriots' first Super Bowl was 2001. Was she even alive? Yeah, she was just, she was born in 2000. She doesn't remember it. She was born in 2000, right? Or maybe 2001. 2000! I was born in 1994. I'm not ancient. I wouldn't even be dating a 24-year-old. I'm sorry. Not happening. Why, you disagree with that, Santa, at 30 years old? My cutoff's 25, if I'm being honest with you. I think 25 is even young. You look like you were disgusted by that comment of mine.
I mean, we're talking about, like, relationship? Are we talking about, you know?
I'm talking about a relationship. Relationship.
I wouldn't cut. 5-year difference, I wouldn't cut off.
2000. That's a. For Bill Belichick at 73?
Whatever. What are you, 1995?
94. Still, I feel creeped out about that. That's me saying that. So how did the Belichick. All right, this is their dad. The kids see dad dating someone significantly younger than them. What the heck do you think they talk about? Thankfully, there's football at that Thanksgiving, and all these guys are busy with jobs. This got to be awkward for them. And no one can be happy about this. No one can be. Bizarre. You know, I was talking with someone last night at the Knicks game. I won't say the person's name. And the person has daughters that are Jordan Hudson's age. I said, imagine if your daughter brought home a 73-year-old man and said, this is my boyfriend. He goes, wouldn't happen. And I go, like, okay, what happens if it did happen? He goes, it's not me they have to worry about. It's the mother. She was like, their mother, the mother of my children, the person said this to me, would not allow that. And she would talk that person out of the house. Oh, my goodness gracious. Anyway, we will delay Take 5 Wednesday. We'll do it later in the show. But this was on my Twitter feed. You had that during the break. I guess Steve Belichick's wife saying, publicist act in a professional manner, don't storm off set, delaying an interview. There's some tea there. That actually extends the story. Then Antoine Staley, who covers the Jets for the New York Daily News, I believe. Yes, the New York Daily News. This is just an interesting back-to-back tweets that I saw. He quote tweeted UNC's statement about Bill Belichick's interview with CBS. Antoine Staley quote tweets this and says, no NFL team is going to touch this circus. Hold on. Antoine, I love you. No NFL team would hire Bill Belichick because he has a 24-year-old girlfriend. I would say this. I don't think if Bill was the coach of the Falcons, I'm not saying he can't date Jordan Hudson. Jordan Hudson ain't having this say. I'll tell you that. This could go on in college. But in an NFL organization, this would not be tolerated. She would not be able to have this much power. But the reason why I bring this up isn't just to kind of poke fun at Antoine's tweet. Because to be fair, EJ said the same thing on the morning show. Where he's like, oh, Bill Belichick shows every day why teams wouldn't hire him. The Atlanta Falcons still look good for hiring Raheem Morris over Bill Bleep and Belichick? No chance. I'd rather have Bill Belichick and his 24-year-old girlfriend, ugh, disgusting statement, than Raheem Morris as the head football coach of the Atlanta Falcons. That's number one. But think about this. This is why I'm bringing this up. These were the tweets back-to-back that I saw on my timeline. And it has nothing to do with Antoine. It was just his tweet. Antoine Staley covers the NFL saying, no NFL team is going to touch this circus. Right? That was one tweet. The tweet then that I next see on my timeline from JPA Football. Trending. It's one of these aggregators. Former Raiders wide receiver Henry Ruggs has been training nonstop while in prison with the hopes of playing football again once he is released, Josh Jacobs told The Pivot. Multiple teams could be interested in Ruggs upon his release. He could be getting out as soon as a year. First off, I understand a lot of times teams ignore off-the-field issues if a player's out of a jail cell or served his time and they bring a player back. If I'm running an NFL team, Henry Ruggs, you go kick rocks. You couldn't pay me enough money to employ him with what he did. That's number one. Number two, the timing of those tweets. Oh, you can't hire Bill Belichick in the NFL because he's a 24-year-old girlfriend. But someone that drinks and drives and kills someone. Oh, yeah. No problem. Once he gets out of a jail cell, we'll easily bring that person in. Like, what world are we living in? But those were the tweets that I saw during the break. Bill Belichick's son's wife going after Jordan Hudson. Antoine Staley saying Bill Belichick basically is unhireable in the NFL, but Henry Ruggs. Ugh, Henry Ruggs. Can't stand him. Oh, when he gets out of prison. Oh, yeah, the NFL team could bring him in. Ay, ay, ay. What a world we live in.
It's going to happen. Whether we like it or not, someone's bringing him in.
You know what? Not me. If I'm running an NFL team, not me. And the guy hasn't played in, what, 3-4 years?
He's 26 years old.
Stop. There is no chance. Go find another line of work. If I'm running an NFL team, no chance I'm bringing that guy in. That's me. Other teams will do it, but I am not doing it. If Zach Gelb owned an NFL team, no chance. Untouchable.
You know, we've said this about a lot of guys, and a lot of owners kind of make those exceptions. Michael Vick found other teams, and, you know, variety of other guys. You probably shouldn't have found other teams.
Not worth it to me.
Kareem Hunt has found other teams.
Once again, not worth it. Guy's been in jail for, what, 3 years? Not like, I'm not bringing him in. Not worth it. We don't even know how good the guy could still be on an NFL field. He should have probably never been drafted as early as he was anyway to begin with the Raiders. It's Zach Elbsch on the Infinity Sports Network. Leroy Butler, the inventor of the Lambeau Leap. He's going to join us in studio next. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network.